Hello and welcome back to an episode of Untalented. Today I'm joined with the super talented Helena, and we're gonna kick straight off with some this or that to warm us up. Okay, you ready?
Mm-hmm.
Apple Music or Spotify?
Spotify.
Leading or doing?
Leading.
Progressive or innovative?
Ooh, I don't even know the difference. So bad.
I love
progressive.
That. Okay, nice, nice. Photos or videos?
Videos.
Intuition or insight?
Intuition.
Films or books?
Films.
Winter or summer?
Summer.
Yeah, nice. Cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Ambition or comfort?
Ambition.
Skills or fame?
Oh, skills.
Skills, nice.
100%.
Nice, I love them. I was coming up with them on the tube this morning, like, oh, which ones are you going
to
like?
That was too fast for me to work out what makes me seem, like, more likable.
Yeah, literally.
I didn't even have a chance.
You just blast straight through them.
Yeah, exactly. Them.
Well,
I'm a bit sweaty.
It does. It makes, I don't know what it is. As soon as someone's, like, quick fire questions or this and that, I'm always like, wait, I'm not ready. Like, I don't feel good in this.
But also part of me was like, oh, my God, Apple Music, are they a brand partner? Like, do you want me to work with them? Like, ah!
I do feel bad for Apple Music, because they get a bad rep. Like, everyone just is obsessed with Spotify.
Mm.
And then, like, we have it unknown that when someone new joins, we're all Spotify, and someone new joins and they're like, oh, I use Apple Music, and we're instantly all like, oh, do you really? Yet none of us have tried it. Like, I have no idea if it's better or worse.
That's a good point.
Which is terrible of me.
I haven't massively tried it. I do like Apple TV a lot, but you can't do everything. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
let's just
true.
Give it to Spotify. Like,
true.
You can't do everything.
Just own it. And run with it. Well, thank you so much for joining us on Untalented. I was trying to work out when we first, like, met each other, but I think it was a couple of years ago, and I had just basically stalked you and thought that your work was
you
really
did.
Cool.
I remember what chair you. I was sitting on in my lounge when I got your LinkedIn stalky message.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I was freelancing.
Yes.
And then you very quickly became my therapist.
Don't worry, I'm signed up.
Yeah,
of course.
Amazing. I always think that, like, people that work in, like, career searching and recruitment must just know all the gossip. Like,
yeah,
I'd love to go and get you drunk and really, like, get all the details.
We can arrange
you.
That. We can do that.
And you must just be everyone's therapist, because, you know, you work in an industry where, like, people are in this for the career.
Mm-hmm.
They're in it for the passion, and, you know, the money can be amazing, but yeah, you don't, like, really sort of, you don't just sort of, like, get up and sort of, you can't be on autopilot with this job. So
yeah, for sure.
People put their, like, souls into it. And so that creates a lot of emotion. Mm-hmm. As well.
Yeah. And I think as well, it's super important for us to, like, have that therapy element and be invested. Like, a job search is not just a thing that you do, like, willy-nilly.
Mm.
You need to make sure it's right for you in that moment, but also in the future as well. So
yeah,
after some professional stalking, we're now here, which is epic. But I'm gonna ask you the first question into it.
Yep.
Of who was the first person to make you feel talented?
So I always like hearing the answers to this question.
Mm-hmm.
When you ask other people on the podcast. I think for me, I was sort of doing, like, classic CD thing of, like, interrogating it and being like, actually, what is, not to sound like too much, am I allowed to swear? I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay. Not to sound too much like a wanky CD, but I think that I was thinking about what is creativity, and really, because I was casting my mind back to, like, those first memories of feeling encouraged and creative, I had no skills. Like, I had no skills. No one is born, like, a great designer or, like, amazing at, like, mixing a track, or, like,
yeah,
no one is good at that. Organically, you can have an instinct for it, but those skills always need to be nurtured. So really, for me, I was thinking about, like, okay, well, what comes before skills? It's the passion.
Yeah.
Like, that is creativity. Because anyone can be creative. It really is just feeling passion for something. And then for most of us, it gets to the point where you feel so passionate that you're like, I'm going to learn how to do that thing so I can do it too. But not always. Sometimes you just observe it, and that's your creativity, is observing the creative. So I think it was a really long way to say that I think it was probably my mum.
Okay.
So she... she was really, really good just sort of recognizing, cheerleadering basically, and recognizing that someone's interested in something.
Mm-hmm.
Let's, like, let's push it.
So yeah,
like,
yeah, nice.
Even little things, like if I was really into, I remember one summer I was really into green, this like lime green. So she like got me lime green stuff. And then I won Christmas. I kept telling everyone I was going to be an artist. So she like bought me an easel for Christmas. Like she was so good at just, it didn't matter what your skills were or if she in any way thought I was going to be an artist, that wasn't the point. And the point was, Helena's really like into this. I want to encourage that passion and like push that forward as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a really like, really important skill for CDs to have, and lots of them don't.
Yeah, it's like that nurturing.
Side. It's so much more than like your experience and your own skill set, because we all have completely different skill sets. Mm-hmm. And it's important to have a team of people who fill in the gaps of your skill sets that you don't have. But yeah, I think it's that like, okay, this person has said that they really want to start doing this, so let's like make sure we can do that for them.
And, yeah,
like,
yeah.
This person has a real instinct for this and I don't even know if they know it, but I'm going to tell them because they should know that they're actually really good at this. And
yeah, I think that's a super like important skill for people of recognizing, oh, you maybe have a natural flair in this, or I feel like you could if you knew it was something that you could pursue or get involved in. And I do think, yeah, parents are, it's like the balance, isn't it, of like, am I being a pushy parent or am I really nurturing this and encouraging something that they're going to be excited about? The lime green thing is so funny. I would like tell my mum that I like something or like a color or like anything, and then the next weeks that's all I get and all I see, and I'm like, okay, yeah, this is very much in that sense.
But it's so nice because like it's such the key thing that my mum was doing was like never holding me accountable. Like I didn't have to be the best person in art at school. Like that was irrelevant. My actual ability was irrelevant.
Yeah, nice.
I was so young, there was no skill set. Like it was just joy and passion. And I think that is what needs to be like nurtured, and it's really easy to lose that as an adult, especially if you work in creativity and it stops becoming your passion because it's your job.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that is, yeah, it was my mum, and it's really important. It's always, she died when I was really young, but it's really stuck, that part of her has really stuck with me, and I really try and like implement it as well, because you have to just encourage passion as much as you can.
100%. And I think in the like in the industry of a creative industry, if as soon as that passion is lost, then it just suffers massively, because it then becomes a job and it becomes mundane, and you kind of look outside in and think, why did I get into this again? And it's then refinding that. So I think having people that encourage that and push that the whole way is so important, and encourage it in a way that isn't like, this is for work, this is just to do with the work that we're making. It's like, actually, this is for you to do outside of this, which will then benefit us on a whole. So yeah, I think it's a really important skill to have that I think more and more people should lean into a little bit in like the professional world, so to speak.
And it's why casting for a job is so important. Like when we have people in at something, it's really like, often I'll look at what is like the personal passion point of this brief, because that's who I actually want to get on more than, you know, looking at someone's like years of experience in something, for example. Obviously they have to have the skill set to do the job, but I like, if we're working on a gaming brief, I really just want to work with like creatives who are also amazing, who love gaming, you know, like that makes it, makes all the difference, that bit of passion.
100%. And like, people who love something, they just understand it so much more and understand how you can then communicate to that audience, because they are the audience. Yeah. So it just makes everything so much easier, which I love. So you are now currently CD, a creative director at something. And I know that you didn't come into the industry in that like conventional way, which I love. But yeah, I would love to hear more about that journey and how you have landed where you are, basically.
Yeah, sure. So I think it's really important, first of all, because I'm going to talk about interning, I think it's really important to talk about people's like socioeconomic background before they start talking about their experiences, because we all have a context, and depending on that context, things will be easier or harder for us. And I'm from a middle class family, and I was able to live at home for free. I wasn't in London, but living at home for free meant that I could intern and work for like pennies when I first started out. And then I still had to work in between my placements, but that burden was not there that so many people have.
Yeah.
So I really recognise that privilege, for sure. And I started out, so I studied journalism, And then I like interned at like every magazine, every like women's lifestyle magazine.
Amazing.
Sort of going, like your Grazias and your Vogues and things like that. Which was really fascinating because everyone works differently, mm-hmm. and you are just completely invisible as an intern, like you are ignored. And I loved that because I could just like sit and observe and watch and like looking at what was and wasn't resonating with the team and the way that their leaders were leading them. And even just like just the dynamics and the ways of working, you really get a very like, because this was pre-COVID days as well. This was like 10 years ago. So everyone was always in the office and yeah, I was always the first one in and like always one of the last to leave. And like, cause I just loved it so much. I was such a geek. Like just wanted to be there the whole time, didn't take lunch breaks. And yeah, it was always very fascinating to me to see the hierarchies, the ways of working, things like that. And then I worked at Bauer for a bit, mm-hmm. who a publishing house, and they had this like special projects department, which was super fun. It was basically like working on like a brief sprint in advertising. So marketing department will come to you and say, here's an audience. There's a gap in the market with like this particular age, women in their 60s for a digital platform that talks about menopause, for example. Mm-hmm. Create a magazine, go.
That's so cool.
It was so cool. And it was even cooler for me because I was very junior. So I had like had to make very little big decisions, but was completely thrown into the process.
I think that's like must have been such a good learning curve as well. Like you probably look back at that think, oh my God, that has really set me up for all of these like different things that could happen.
And you just realize there's like a million people. Like we would do shoots, like we would produce a full, if it was digital, you'd produce like a full week's worth of content. Mm-hmm. And if it was print, you would go away and produce the first issue. So there's loads of people, but we're all normally crammed in like a cloakroom, like a tiny little room, and there's stuff all plastered on the wall. I really miss that about journalism. You don't really do that in advertising because everyone's quite like chic.
Yeah.
But the something offices are really minimal, which mm-hmm. I get it. But like if journalism is just like stuff all over the wall,
chaos.
And then there's like it's chaos. There's always a rat, like it. There's like an office rat. And that was really fun and sort of like pulling in favors here and there. And oh yeah, Helena can just do this, direct this shoot, fine. Like, you know, like it was kind of really all like guns blazing type thing. And then I got a job at online like magazine, which we were calling it at the time, online magazine. You would not use that phrase anymore.
That is actually like feels such a throwback. I've been like,
no one understood that you could digitalize magazines. Like, it was called The Debrief, and it was amazing. And it was like sort of Grazia's little sister is the way that we'd kind of framed it. It actually is gone now. It didn't last super long. Mm-hmm. But I was there for a year, and I loved it so much. And then I was just paid dreadfully. And then I went freelance for a little bit and was a staff writer. And then I ended up working at an agency where they had like an online editorial offering for Sainsbury's.
No way.
Of all brands. And such a like sort of big shift from like women's fashion and lifestyle.
How did you find that? Like, how did you find sort of shifting almost like your mindset and your output from like the kind of glitzy fashion lifestyle to Sainsbury's, which is like such a big gap in the market?
I mean, it's interesting because like, the Debrief, it was like glitzy by day. By night, I was like in a house share eating like pop chips. Remember pop chips? Because like everyone at Fashion Week was getting sent pop chips. So all we'd get sent was pop chips. None of us had money.
Oh my God, that's amazing. So like we were like making
pop chips for breakfast, pop chip sandwich for lunch. Like I was just like living on freebies. So like it felt glamorous from the outside. It wasn't.
Right.
And then so shifting actually to like a job in content where I was paid like three times my salary. I'd never seen, like, it was mad. And I mean, if you're a journalist, you can write about everything, mm-hmm. anything, it doesn't really matter. And like food and drink is such a lovely thing, and I loved my team, and like my boss was brilliant, Jodie Carey. She was the editorial director at the time, and I loved her, and it was just fun. Like it was just fun. And then we started working in doing these top-down like recipe videos, which are have been and gone now, but at the time they were like one of the first people to do it. And then I started just like, I was like, cool, well this is great, I don't want to write all the time, I want to like direct videos and write scripts and concept shoot ideas. And that's mm-hmm. where I started going into content from there.
Amazing.
And then working in advertising fully.
Yeah, I think there's always like that pivotal role or moment or experience where you kind of, it's like the realization of, wait, I can actually do this as a job and like not just be pigeonholed into that one writing element. I can actually concept and do shoots and direct. And yeah, I do. I think that everyone kind of seems to have that, especially when you come in from a non-traditional like way. It's not that you went to ad school and understand that they were roles that you could go and just jump straight into. And then did you go straight into freelancing in the ad space, or did that work?
I was like a staff creative for like 2.5 years or something like that. And even that job title made me laugh. I was like, that's not a job title, creative. Like that's like a thing you are. That's
they just made that up and put it on the wall.
It's so funny. Everything about advertising made me chuckle when I first started finding out. I was like, people work in teams. Like,
the
what?
Teams thing is mad. I remember when I first like learned about teams, because before I started doing this, like I had no idea advertising was even a thing. And I remember it being like, okay, you're going to help people find creative teams. And I'm like, what? These people work in partners. They're like work married forever. Like, I thought it was the most bizarre thing in the world.
So weird.
But then in the advertising bubble, it's so normal. Like, I'm so used to it now, but I speak to people who don't know about that and they're like, what? Like, so weird. So yeah, I can totally empathize on you finding that strange.
Yeah. Also, I think because I did a bit of everything, I was just like, oh, you could just do like one of the things.
Yeah,
but then
that's
you don't
true.
really like good. The teams that I work with now, they are both like always worth their own salt. I don't even know if that's a phrase, but you know what I mean? Like, they're both very good at things. They don't have to be together, they're just stronger that way. But yeah, that absolutely blew my mind. All of it blew my mind. Like adverts, like I just, do you know what I mean?
It's so true though.
TVC, people wanting to work on TVCs. Even now, that's still, like, I don't know why anyone would want to work on a TVC. Like, I find that the most boring spec. Like, I it blows my mind still, a lot of it. But I think that's why I'm good at my job. I'm good at like sense checking. Also, because I'm not from London, I don't know anyone from out. I didn't grow up. Like, you can kind of just look at things and be like, is actually like Shirley from Reading going to care that we're doing this thing?
Yeah, it's such a good point. Yeah, I do think that there is, and it's a conversation I've had before with people where there's like an advertising bubble, but London, and like we see a lot of amazing work and we're exposed to it. But if I showed my parents, for example, who live up north in a tiny village, it just wouldn't resonate. They wouldn't get it as much. And it's not relevant, which is then where you do need people from different backgrounds, different walks of life, different places to actually be able to do that sense checking element of like, this is a really cool idea, but who's going to get it? Like, what is going on with it? So yeah, I do think that's a really interesting point.
Yeah. It's a weird one. And when I did go freelance eventually after working as a creative, I went to like some really big agencies and I had to just be quiet for a lot of it, because you can't sort of be like, what you see, like the budget for digital is tiny, and then you see the budget for the TVC and it's like, what the hell? Like, why?
Yeah,
what?
It's crazy.
Everyone's gonna skip it, or they're gonna like pause it while they make a cup of tea. Like, no one's really like, yeah, there's so much relevant stuff you can do as a brand to resonate with your audience, even in the most dullest of briefs. Like, there's so much you can do. I don't know why sometimes there is just this like knee-jerk reaction to like put it all into something that, just because it's going to be like on the telly. And I just it blows my mind.
Yeah. And did you find like when you were freelancing at these places that the being quiet element of it was often and frustrating, that your like creativity was almost capped in that sense because the output was mainly like traditional TVC led?
Nah, like, I mean, yeah, when I say being quiet, I mean, I wouldn't stand up in a meeting and be like, I think you should take £1 million from this budget and give it to me to make this. It wasn't like that, but I always just pushed it. I always pushed as much as I could, basically. Like, I really did and do, I think. Yeah, no, not really silence. You just have to be like polite and read the room. But yeah, I think no. I always, if someone gives me a creative brief, you have to push it as much as you think is going to resonate. Mm-hmm. You know, there's all more often than not when you get a creative brief, like there's an obvious answer. There's always an obvious answer, if there's not an obvious answer, then the brief is probably not very well written.
Yeah.
So you always can like fall back on the obvious, but really what you want to do is push and push and push to get away from that and do something that you really feel like is going to resonate.
Mm-hmm.
I was always like going to the strategist and being like, what do you think we should, like, what does this bit mean, like should we do this instead, like, and you've got to try and interrogate it a little bit and work out what are my parameters, how much can I push this.
Yeah, for sure. No, I totally understand on that point. With the like the resonating thing and the insight-led thing, where do you find them, like where do you seek out this information and this, obviously working with strategy, but like what, where do you go for your inspirations and your insights?
It's interesting because that was one of your this and that was like, yes, insight or your gut feeling,
intuition.
Got that wrong. Yeah, I think that there is something to say definitely for intuition. And I really use my intuition a lot because I'm in the bubble, but I can see outside still. Mm-hmm. So I use that a lot. But I really think that obviously, like, if you want to make, you can't just sort of like waltz into a meeting and make a lofty comment about how something's not going to resonate outside of London. You do have to go with like the data and the proof.
Yeah.
And that is when you have to just like tap into your strategist and data analyst. You have to have that research and those facts there with you. So it really depends. Like we do a lot of, as something, we do a lot of like working with different communities. Mm-hmm. So if we're doing a work in like sort of how, you know, Gen Z gift each other, we'll talk to Gen Zs about how they gift each other and what mm-hmm. are those moments. And like, do they even give each other birthday presents anymore? Or yeah. are you more likely to give someone a gift because they've like had a shit day at work? Like, you know, and so we're kind of like, I think hearing it from the horse's mouth is always key. And mm-hmm. it goes back to casting and like making sure you're always casting the right yeah. people for the role. So I think it's a mix of both, listening to your intuition, but making sure that you're talking to the people who are actually going to be receiving this and whose attention you want.
Yeah.
And getting them involved as much as possible. Like, if you have a brief that is about, you know, I'm trying to think off the top of my head, like female design, millennial designers, like speak to female millennial designers and mm-hmm. like get cast them on it and like get them to work on it as well.
Yeah.
I think so it's a real mix. It's an interesting one though.
Yeah, it sounds like even just that sounds so basic, but it's just not happening enough.
I need to tell you a story now.
Okay.
So I got permission from the people mm-hmm. To tell this, that told me it. So this is an example of where someone has completely misunderstood casting.
Okay.
And it might sound like I'm contradicting myself, but the night before International Women's Day,
yeah,
I got two friends actually text me with really similar stories. One of them works at a really, really big agency
mm-hmm.
and all the female creatives in that agency received an email after working hours that the day before International Women's Day saying, hi, sorry, really exciting brief has just come in for this brand who wants to do something for International Women's Day. Appreciate that it's really late, but could you get us one-page ideas in our inbox before 11 a.m. because this is really exciting and we need to go back to it. And the email was only to the female creators. Like, it was from two male CDs, obviously,
mm-hmm.
who then had to report into a male ECD. The women were not being offered any like, and you'll get the rest of the day off
yeah,
the next
no compensation.
Day or like nothing, like absolutely no compensation whatsoever. They weren't even asked like, do you agree with this brand? Because like obviously any brand that is trying to put their hand up and be like, we support anything
yeah.
has to do the due diligence. So they didn't even ask like, are you up for this? Like, do you agree with this brand first of all? And if you feel comfortable, we'd love some ideas.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that is like, I honestly laugh because otherwise you're gonna cry. Like, it just blew my mind.
Yeah, it's kind of sad as well in the fact that I'm not that shocked that is happening.
My God, no. Like I said, like it wasn't just her. There was like two people with similar stories.
Which is crazy. But then it's just the no thought element of it. Like, how are we still in, it's 2023. How is this celebrated every year? But the lack of thought is still so like prevalent and real.
And the way that should have been dealt with was the agency going back to the brand and saying, the fact that this is such a last minute brief tells us that you, this probably isn't something that you should be talking about publicly. Let's set out a 3-year plan where in like, you know, a 12 month plan.
Yeah.
Where this time next year, you are in an amazing position to talk about International Women's Day because you've done your bit. And this is not a last minute thing and we can't do this because it's inauthentic.
Yeah.
And it's inappropriate.
Well, that's the thing. And I think International Women's Day is such a prime example of that, of like brands just kind of slapping it on their logo or doing a LinkedIn post don't do it for the sake of doing it. Don't do it because you feel like you should do it. Like, do it because you have a platform to like create something progressive and be able to create a conversation around it. But everywhere is still just like, oh, we'll just change our LinkedIn picture for the day and then never talk about it again. It's wild.
It's the same as anything though. It's the same as like for Pride, people will just get like the LGBTQ plus like creatives in a company to work on that. For Black Lives Matter or like Black History Month, like they'll just get like then like black employees to work on that. But then it's like, okay, cool, but when that huge like 3 million budget project comes in, are you also going to give that to the black employee or like the gay employee, because or like the women that you made work all night on this like International Women's Day thing? Because you're probably not. You're probably actually only bringing them in to work on stuff so that you can like roll them out as a token and then shut them away again.
Yeah, it's like, it's mad, because I think like there are definitely parts of the industry and like the space that are being super progressive and changes are happening and things are like exciting things that even I've seen over the past sort of 2, 3, 4 years, but then there's still this like massive marginalization of like all the things that you just mentioned. And it, yeah, it's like, is it gonna ever catch up? Do you think it will ever catch up?
I think, to be honest, it has to. Well, it has to, because we now live in a time where brands used to dictate what consumers want, and now consumers dictate what brands do, because everyone is answerable because of the internet. Like, everyone is answerable. You cannot really get away with anything anymore because you're going to get called out for it. Whether you care and whether you silence it is kind of beyond the point, because like you will just keep getting called out as a brand if the consumer isn't happy. So hopefully, yeah, like there will come a point where, you know, the consumer voice is so strong, the brands have to be briefing the agencies on the right kind of thing. And we've done it before where like if a brand gives you a brief and it doesn't sit right with you, like you can use that consumer insight and that those examples of where how this has gone wrong before and put it back to the brand and say, no, this isn't right, like you really need to change this. So hopefully it will. They're like, also, consumers are just like so bloody savvy now. Like, they're so savvy. They get it. They get that advertising is like trying to sell you stuff. Like, they'll buy into you or they won't. And that's why it's so important for brands to be like culturally relevant and relevant outside of their own specific like offer, the thing they offer. Because otherwise you are just like trying to sell someone a product that they probably don't need.
Yeah, I do think that is like the big this or that element of it, of are you selling me this or are you creating something that's telling me a story that therefore makes me interested in the product or the brand? Like, how do you think that agencies or creatives should shape that and really lean into that more storytelling? Like, is there a specific way that you do it personally, or a way that you think that the industry should push forward in that sense?
Do you mean where brands, getting brands to branch out into culture
Be more storytelling like based rather than product focused?
So lots of brands want to do this now.
Literally every brand ever.
And this is where sometimes as an agency, working for an agency or as a creative, I feel a bit powerless, because to me a lot of the power is in like the brands and the consumer, and it's that back and forth like I was saying just now, like that they have most of the power. However, this is where agencies can really step up and like pull the finger out, because if a brand comes to you and says, we want to own, you mm-hmm. know, like this particular subculture, that's when you can go back and say, okay, cool, well, like you're really not in a position to brief this right now.
Yeah.
Let's work out your like corporate social responsibility plan. Let's look at like your own company makeup. And then from there, we can make a plan where like the last point should be tell everyone about it.
Yeah, that's so true.
That's like the bit at the top of the mountain. Like you've got to walk up it. Like you've got to do the work. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you will 100% get called out on like the International Women's Day Twitter bot thing, salary bot thing that was calling out everyone's like...
Oh my God, yeah.
Love that.
Yeah.
I really wish I thought of that idea. It's so clever. yeah, so I think... Yeah, I think everyone wants it. I think you've just got to do the work. Mm-hmm. So like a really good example of this, we're working with Tommy Hilfiger at the moment.
Okay.
And they are kind of like, obviously, household name, like really interesting history with hip hop, like Aaliyah and Snoop Dogg in the 90s, like wearing their like full Tommy gear in their like really famous pictures. Mm-hmm. People love them on Depop and like resale sites and vintage. But where they're at with Tommy jeans and like they're sort of they're always on like collections now, is they obviously see that there's like a huge dedication and a lot of excitement from a consumer's point of view in streetwear. So rather than just position themselves and saying like, oh, we're a streetwear brand now, bye, like mm-hmm. we're now a streetwear brand, they're like doing the work. They're like finding niche streetwear brands and like collaborating with them on collections and engaging with them and like letting them call the shots more. So like they're really kind of they're doing the thing that you're meant to do, which is like don't just sort of like ask a consumer for their attention and their money. Look at where the consumer wants, where their passion is, where do they want to spend their time and their money, and like give that person money. Like give these like smaller niche cool streetwear brands, give them money, collaborate together and like work together, give them your huge household name platform, and mm-hmm. in return you get this like the attention of this like niche audience who are like very, very dedicated and really love, like, you know, like some of the streetwear, I've been working loads on like Gen Z streetwear audiences, like, you know, like 17-year-old kids in the queue with their mum because they've convinced their mum to let them buy like one hoodie that's really expensive. Like it's sort of that you save up all your money for it. Like it's a dedication, the queuing and the drop waiting and the tracking everything down. Like, and you can't ask for an audience. You can't tell an audience like that mm-hmm. that you've got what they want. You have to demonstrate it.
100%.
So they're a really good example of like a brand.
Yeah, and I think that there are brands who are welcoming that and doing it and understand it, like Nike and the Cortez collab that everyone's gone mad about mm-hmm. and the Tommy stuff that you've mentioned. And I think it is like just that understanding and that recognition of how you can actually empower others to utilize mm-hmm. it as mm-hmm. well. And it's not that it is, oh, we're going to exploit them or we're going to do this or that. It is just, we need to live more in an empowering world of understanding, actually, we are a £1 billion business, we have this set audience, but we have no idea about that, and you do. So let us lean into that, let us work together, because both sides are going to win. And I think
100%.
It's, but I think that's what is not understood, of like both sides will win in this, and you will win so much more than if you tried to do it alone.
And it has to be mutually beneficial. Mm-hmm. And that's when you have to go back and say to a brand, you've got this wrong, because especially with things that are more like emotive and worthy and like, you know, things that really matter. Like mm. you can't say, we're going to shine a light on like all these amazing creative people in like, you know, like young black artists and then like not give them any money.
Yeah.
So it has to be mutually beneficial and mm-hmm. that brief has to fit. And you have to take into consideration, like I said at the beginning, like everyone has a different context and a different background mm-hmm. and some people might be really happy to do something for free or just for the exposure because they're in a position in their life where exposure is on the same level as money in terms of like what they're going to get out of it. Not everyone has that. Some people are going to be in a completely different spot
mm-hmm.
so
I do think it's an exciting time in creative for people to be able to help bridge that gap in, and people to be able to educate about that gap and, and bringing it closer together. It's like, it feels like quite a transformative time, dare I say it, fingers crossed. But yeah, hopefully it will be more moving into that space as well, for sure.
It has to. Like, I really don't see how it can't, like, it has to. Because it's wild sometimes, like, you know, getting that those texts from those friends, getting those last minute briefs. Like, it's something you do think, like, how is this still happening? But it has to stop at some point, because everyone's just going to run out of money.
Yeah, like, do you know what I mean? So true.
And we're going to go the other way, where, like, we started hearing different voices and different opinions and different contexts. If no one wants to work for you, you're not going to get access to those different opinions and contexts. So, like, you need to be open to that.
Yeah, you've just segued us very naturally
into
our nobody wants to work for you.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I love how you just did that off the cuff. That was amazing. but this is something that Unknown has launched. It's a new project called Nobody Wants to Work for You. And it's where we're trying to understand why people are leaving the industry, why this industry is less desirable, and the, like, under the skin elements of that. And I was really excited to chat with you about this. And I think we've obviously had a lot of therapy conversations, as you said. And I think being a female CD, who doesn't work just on TVCs, who hasn't come into the industry through, like, an ad school, I was just really interested to hear how that has been, like, entering this industry, and what has being sort of main frustrations or main, like, celebrations within that journey for you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It's hard.
Yeah.
I think it's definitely harder for people who are not, like, from the same middle-class background as me and, like, who aren't white. There's something, like, 1% of female creative directors or creative directors, it doesn't matter, like, regardless of gender in the advertising industry, are white or something like that, are not white. Mm-hmm. Like, it's mental. So I recognise I've definitely had, like, I've had the upper hand compared to a lot of other people. But still, yeah, it's not easy. And I think I was talking to a friend the other day about, like, what's such a shame is I'm 33. In the next 10 years, I'm looking at, like, life stages I could be looking at is potentially having kids and then, like, preparing for menopause or having early menopause. Mm-hmm. I don't know how I'm going to sustain my career through those in advertising. Like, I just don't know. And I think a lot of that is stuff that lots of industries are dealing with. There's been all this, you know, there's loads of stuff going on about, like, childcare support. And there's a huge just, like, I mean, there's a whole, like, you know, there's lots of gender politics around parenting and roles and responsibilities and things like that. So it's not, I'm not just blaming the industry, but it doesn't help itself. Like, it doesn't help itself at all. Mm-hmm. And I think for me, like, the things that help, because there's lots of things that, like, don't help, which will be really obvious. But I think, like, the things that help me on a day-to-day basis are people who just, like, listen to my experience and don't question it. Like, that is so rare. Like, the MD at Something, Rob Oshie, and the ops director, Blaze Hyperlite, amazing name, neither of them ever question. The three of us run the studio together in London, and they never question my experience. Like, they never, if I say to them, this has happened, and this is how this has made me feel, they never have ever been like, they understand, like, oh, okay, I'm surprised to hear that because that's not how I feel. But they never question it. And it's so refreshing, and it makes my day so much better. And I can actually, like, so much, if, like, the energy that I spend defending myself and having to explain my position and myself, even just, like, having to ask someone three times to make a change that I know, like, a male would have only had to ask once.
Yeah.
Like, even that, I think throughout my career, I could have had, like, years back, you know, like, the energy and the time and, like, yeah, it's just, there are so many easy fixes that we could do. And we talk all the time a lot about like the big things that needs changed. Obviously so many things do, but like day to day, like not having my experience questioned, not being interrupted when I'm trying to explain my experience, big one. And yeah, I think that like those are the ones that I would have so much more energy and I'd be better at my job, mm-hmm. even better at my job, because I don't have to do that.
Yeah, I think like the not having your experience questioned is like such a massive thing. Mm. And I think it's relevant, obviously, not only in this industry, but across the board of like I have this seat at the table because I've worked for it and because of what I have done to get here and because I deserve to be here. So please understand that and appreciate that we may have different views on something or different feels on something. It doesn't mean that your opinion is less relevant. It's just, this is how I'm feeling and allow me to feel like that. And it's mad that it is asking almost for permission to feel how you feel. Like it is crazy, but I do think it's that element of not being questioned is something that is so not spoken about. And I think something that is super easy for females especially, or people from minority backgrounds or different sort of socioeconomic backgrounds, to realize that they don't have to explain as well why they're feeling a certain way or why something has triggered them a certain way. Like it's such a massive thing that still, it's amazing that you're in a position that you're not being questioned and you're not having to ask that, but it's still something that is lacking so much. And I think there should be so much more work done on it. Mm. But then it's also, the more people in those leadership positions mm. and the more people that do step into that, hopefully it will become just the norm. I really hope.
I hope so too. And I also would love to just normalize like emotion at the office. Like, I mean, we've very much normalized anger. Like anger's always been normalized. Like, I think, you know, like having a cry after like a, and like understanding that people cry because they're like, my body biologically reacts with tears and mm-hmm. I have no control over it sometimes. And that's science. Like, and I think that, you know, I cry if I'm angry, I cry if I'm frustrated, cry if I'm really tired, like, you know, mm-hmm. and I think if normalizing just stuff like that, so that, that will really start to like level the playing field.
Yeah, I'm such a crier. Like about ridiculous things sometimes, and then you're like, why am I crying? And then it becomes a big deal and then you want to cry more. So yeah, I completely get that.
But
for
why
sure.
is it a big deal to have a fucking cry? Like, I really don't get it. Like,
yeah,
I just, like the other day my 2-year-old nephew was crying because his dinner was late and I was like, I hear you.
Yeah, like, mood. Like, same.
You cry. Like, it's cool. Like, cry, wipe those tears, carry on. You're not offending anyone by crying. Not like, you know, if someone loses their temper mm-hmm. and they can't control their anger and they shout at someone, you can control that, like you actually, and there's help for it. Mm-hmm. But like literal tears forming in your tear ducts, like that's not, we can't do, like I don't want to feel bad about that happening mm-hmm. to me, you know?
Yeah, it shouldn't be like an embarrassing thing or a shame thing because you're crying in the office. No. Like, yeah, I'm just a crier. It's just always been the way. And I think it always will be.
Most women are.
Yeah, like, it is like, it's just an emotive response. But I can cry if I'm really happy. I can cry if I'm really frustrated. Like you said, it's kind of irrelevant to what is causing it. It's just a response mechanism, but one that you can't control. And how do you think, a big question,
okay,
how do you think that the industry can actually promote and empower more female leaders?
I think it's that. I think it's everything that we've talked about. I think it's looking at little everyday things, like not questioning someone's personal experience in something and not making someone explain themselves all the time. Also, and like creating more emotionally intelligent spaces to work mm-hmm. and understanding that there's not a one size fits all, like understanding how do people like to be fed back to, how mm-hmm. do people, you know, that is like, to me, very like intuitive, but it's not intuitive to everyone. And I think it's intuitive to me because I'm a woman. Like I'm very like emotionally intelligent and aware of other people's emotions and gauging them and trying to, I think that is a big like everyday thing that people could do. But then there's also like, obviously the huge stuff, like we need pay transparency. I need to know, like, as in, you know, like me as in like the proverbial woman needs to know what that what my like counterparts are getting paid. I need to know, like, I mean, we talk about pay all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I bet you have to say to people all the time, like, no, you should ask for more money, by the way, like to women, like, yeah. I bet, yeah.
And it's always like a conversation that I feel like I'm always in a position of empowering, of saying, you don't need to justify why you want this. You don't need to explain it. You don't need to be worried about it. And I think it has been like a really interesting place for me to sit as well, also as a woman, to be able to sit and say, this is a salary that they want, full stop, type of thing. And it's mad because as soon as you do it in that way, there's never room for question and there's never room for someone wanting an explanation or wanting an understanding. Like, yeah, of course, sometimes agencies or brands just won't have that budget and that's okay, but it's never a case of, we don't think that she deserves that because she's a woman or because she's done X or Y.
Yeah.
So it's been a really interesting place for me as well, of like an understanding and a learning of, okay, actually there is so much power in just owning it and knowing it and understanding what you deserve, but also there's so much lacking in being able to get to that space,
yeah,
which is such a shame.
And we're speaking of like hiring, we're hiring for a few positions at the moment, and diversity is like top of the list every time. And it's, what is interesting is it does take longer, like,
yeah,
there just are more white men in the industry. And so you do have to spend more time finding, like, you know, candidates who aren't white or candidates who aren't, like, you know, a female. Like, who aren't male, sorry. Like, it takes a lot more time. And also, I think lots of people are, like, hiding in plain sight. Like, people aren't, you know, it's really scary to, like, leave a job and go find another one. And if you don't have that instilled confidence, you're probably not going to do it.
Yeah.
So, like, it's also about, like, poaching. Like, going searching around and being like, who's this person? They're really cool. I'm really keen on, like, hearing more about what they're doing in their company at the moment and can they do it here?
Mm-hmm.
You know, whereas I think it's that as well. So it takes a lot more time and you have to be willing to invest that time because that time is, you know, like the candidates have taken a long time to get to where they are.
Mm-hmm.
So you should do them due diligence and take time to find them as well.
Yeah, I think that's something that is so like misunderstood as well, of if you are wanting a person for your roles, like, yeah, just realize that you're not going to get them overnight. And if you do want to do it through a process of just direct applicants, then you're likely not going to find the right person or the person that you want in that moment. So yeah, I hope that there is, like, I get it, everyone is busy and time is money and that horrible old saying and all of that, but I do hope that there is an understanding and a shift that there can be more resource given to that, but which is also why I think companies like Unknown exist, because we do have that time. It is our full-time job to be able to find these people and speak and that side of thing. But I just, yeah, I think that is the wider problem. I think you've probably nailed it there.
And I think also, you know, you hear a lot like, oh, well, there aren't any female CDs. How can I highlight?
It's like, yeah.
There are, I can name like six like women working in the industry who should be at CD level and aren't, because they haven't been given the confidence. They feel a bit broken from the industry and they don't think they're entitled to that pay or that responsibility.
Mm.
And it, like, they are out there. They're, like I say, they are hidden in plain sight. Like, you have to find them. But yeah, you guys are really good at that.
Thank you.
That's the point of you. That's why you exist, isn't it?
Like, it is like seeking out as well. And like, empowering someone to give them that confidence to say, hang on, you should be getting X or you should be doing Y. Like, it is taking that time and doing the LinkedIn stalking like I did to find you and that side of things. Just another thing that I wanted to mention as well is, I hate the phrase side hustle, but it's probably the best one to explain it. But obviously I know you do poetry on the side and that's something that massively influences your work. How do you think that the industry can better accommodate like passion projects, side hustles, and allow people that creative freedom outside of the 9 to 5?
It's interesting because most people I know in the industry have their stuff they do outside of work. I tend to not really mix the two personally because my poetry is a lot about like sex and things that you don't want to talk about at work.
Yeah.
And it make it hard to like have a nice, like, you know, Monday morning conference in the morning and like all your colleagues have read this poem that you've written on the Sunday night. But yeah, for me, I mean, I shot a poetry film, my first poetry film, at the end of last year, and we used something like the studio space. They like get Andy, one of the founders, like gave it, was like, yeah, use it. That's what it's here for. Like, go.
So amazing.
We like rather to rehearse rather than having to like find the place. We just use that space. So I really think that is, it should be like a regardless of what your thing is, just give them like money or give them something that equates to money, like free rehearsal space.
Yeah.
I think if you really are in touch with who you're employing and who your team is, you have to really know everyone's passion points because that's how you cast them correctly. Mm-hmm. And then from there, you can look at how you can help. I mean, most studios like have kit. Just like if it's sitting in the cupboard, like lend it out, give it to people.
Yeah.
Most studios have, you know, like edit suites. Like, give that to someone free. Like, let them use it when you're not doing like outside of working hours. Mm-hmm. You know. If it would be like, so I've had worked in studios before where they've given me money to shoot stuff. Like, they've just sort of like give it because they know it looks good for them. You know, if you work somewhere and you want to be able to employ someone who also does this really cool thing, like, you have to do that.
Yeah.
So I think it's actually very, very easy for studios to be supportive in that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, nice. And what, like, obviously we've spoken a lot about relevancy and helping brands plug into that and actually make sense to people outside of an Adland bubble. Mm. What do you think that this industry or agencies can do to remain relevant and interesting and exciting for future generations of creative?
Yeah, I think if the industry stays the way it is, I don't know where my role is in 10 years time. Like, I don't know if I have one, because it's like quite hard now, but it will be harder when I'm experiencing menopause or if I have kids and I have to. So I don't know. I think it's hard to say because I don't think it's going to look the same. I don't think the industry is going to be like this for longer. Mm-hmm. And when I say be like this, I mean, I think we would have shared a lot of our archaic traditions. I also think that, like I say, like the consumers are changing. So like, they're not going to want the kind of work that we're still doing now in 10 years time.
Mm-hmm.
They're just not.
Yeah.
Not only because obviously like the media is completely changing, so there'll be like more places to put it, but they want authenticity and storytelling, like you say, a meaning. And I think also like people are generally buying less. And so,
yeah, there seems like that just massive consciousness now of,
yeah,
buying less, which,
I mean, it depends what you're selling as well, because if you're selling, yeah, like a subscription, you know, it's not really the same. It's not going to like save the environment if you stop buying it. But but yeah, exactly, you're right. Like, and just people care about it's not even like what you're buying, it's like who you're giving your money to.
Yeah.
And like, do they deserve your money?
Mm-hmm.
What are they doing for you? Like, do they really, does Spotify deserve your money? Like, what are they doing for artists? You know, like, not to pick on them, I have no idea what they're doing for artists, but yeah, you know what I mean? Like, it's, I think spending habits are changing as well. So yeah, I don't think the big agencies will be changing drastically.
Mm-hmm. They have to keep up. Like, yeah. I always laugh about the TVC side, and I don't own a TV. And like, I don't own a TV. Yeah. I don't watch TV.
And when
I'm having, like, if I'm watching TV ads and trying to keep up with what's going on, I watch them on YouTube. And it's just hilarious to me. Like, I caught myself doing it and was like, wait, this is so ridiculous. Mm. But it is the way that I would seek them out to see them.
Mm.
So yeah, I think the industry is just inevitably going to have to catch up, basically.
And looking at what does branded stuff look like, we just wrapped on a, at the end of last year, we just wrapped on a branded documentary, which is going to like resonate so much more than a 60-second TVC.
Yeah. You know? And consumers seek it out because, yeah, they're interested in it and it's relevant and they want to consume it. So
yeah.
Yeah. Stinky Fish.
Yeah.
We always ask someone to bring something that they really hate, a stinky fish, so to speak, and yeah, tell us why and justify it.
So I was interested in this because I thought the stinky fish concept came from like when someone's at work and they're like reheating like salmon in the microwave.
Oh my God, it is hell. That is something that is Ollie's bugbear.
I wasn't sure that if the brief was to bring something that is annoying about the office, or is it just in your life in general?
Office, life in general, okay, fine, anything.
Fine. But yeah, this the fish thing. I always feel bad for people that want to like reheat fish or eggs. I feel bad for them.
I don't feel bad because you made a choice to do that. You did. Like, you did make that choice and you brought that in. No choice. Yeah.
Right, yeah. What were mine? So one of mine was going to be interrupting, but then I thought that's actually quite serious and we should probably think of something that's quite, like, not serious. But interrupting is, oh, God, my biggest bugbear. I hate it, even though I do it, you know, myself a lot. I think that mine was sniffing. So people constantly sniffing. God. Every time I get the bus into work every morning, I'm always sitting next to someone who just doesn't understand that you can just blow your nose. Like, it drives me mad. And I know this is probably going to sound really ironic because I've got a cough at the moment and I've been coughing throughout this podcast, which has probably turned some people off. But yeah, the constant sniffing where I'm probably overthinking it, but in my mind I'm like, that's a person that just doesn't take responsibility for themselves. Because, like, really, if you don't even know that, like, you can just blow your nose, what else, like, can you cook your dinner? Like, can you, do you know what I mean? Like, what can you do?
Don't.
Like, it's so easy.
Sniffing is hell to me. And I always feel like I'm being too oversensitive to something but like I genuinely just can't be around it. And I just want to say to them, if you blow your nose, you're going to feel so much better. Like, your world is going to change in this moment if you just blow your nose. But then obviously I can't approach strangers and say that to them.
I've like given someone a tissue before and just been like, oh, do you want this? Like, oh my God, nicely.
So passag, like, I love that.
Do you want it? But no, I have also like directly said it to people, but when we've been on shoots, that's a really good excuse to say. She's like, oh, it's actually interfering with the sound. Or you like blame it on the talent or something. Do you know what I mean?
Like, I love
talent
that.
Doesn't like you sniffing.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it's really, really annoying. I hate it.
I really hate it as well.
Gross.
Yeah. It is just bottom line, it's gross.
Go to Boots. Just go to Boots, get a pack of travel tissues.
Pack of tissues and a nasal spray, your life will be changed, basically.
Exactly.
I love that. I love it ending on a lighthearted thing as well. Yeah. So good, so good. But no, it's been amazing to have you on. And yeah, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for being my unofficial therapist.
Honestly, anytime. No, anytime. But yeah, finito.